The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles principally from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the issue, May 2021. And the first article is entitled, Can You Avoid Macular Degeneration? You have the power to reduce certain risk factors for the disease. We've come a long way in our understanding and treatment of age-related macular degeneration, the leading cause of vision loss for people age 50 or older in the United States. We've learned that certain genes and lifestyle factors increase the risk for developing AMD and discovered treatments that often slow the disease's progression. Yet, for all our advances, we still don't have a guaranteed way to prevent AMD. You are at greater risk if one of your parents had the condition. One needs to be concerned, but it doesn't mean you're destined to get it. It's a complex disease, and it takes a combination of factors for it to develop, says Dr. Joan Miller, Chief of Ophthalmology at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts Eye and Ear, and Ophthalmology Chair at Harvard Medical School. What is AMD? Remember, AMD is age-related macular degeneration. AMD destroys the macula, the central part of the retina, the layer of tissue in the back of the eye that changes light into electrical signals. The signals are sent to the brain, which converts them into images. There are two types of AMD. Both types reduce the clarity of central vision, blurring or even erasing the image in the center of a person's vision. In dry AMD, the most common form, deposits of fat and protein called drusen slowly accumulate behind the retina, causing it to thin and leading to the destruction of the macula's light-sensitive photoreceptor cells. The result is vision loss. As AMD progresses, drusen can cause new abnormal blood vessels to grow under and into the macula. The blood vessels leak and bleed, rapidly causing photoreceptor cell damage, scarring, and vision loss. This is called wet AMD. Our ability to treat both forms of AMD varies. We can sometimes slow dry AMD, Dr. Miller says. The best approach is a cocktail of antioxidant nutrients called AREDS2. And this cocktail includes vitamin C, E, copper, lutein, zeaxanthin, and zinc. AREDS2 is named for a study of the nutrient regimen in people with AMD. The components of AREDS2 fight free radicals, abundant molecules in the retina that can cause oxidative stress. Studies have shown that AREDS2 may reduce dry AMD progression by 25%. We can do much more to stop wet AMD. The most effective treatment is anti-VEGF therapy, short for antivascular endothelial growth factor therapy, pioneered by Dr. Miller and her colleagues. VEGF is a molecule that causes tiny new blood vessels to grow, sometimes in places where they are not needed. In anti-VEGF therapy, doctors inject medications into the eye that block the effect of VEGF. This can reduce blood vessel leakage, prevent new blood vessel growth in the eye, and even restore some lost vision. Another option is laser surgery to seal leaky blood vessels in the eye. What about future treatments? Many other approaches to treat AMD are currently being studied or considered for study. These include stem cell therapy. This treatment replaces damaged retinal cells with stem cells that will turn into replacement retinal cells. Also, there's gene therapy. This approach introduces new genes into the eye to help the retina produce proteins that stop abnormal blood vessel growth. Statin therapy, and of course statins are drugs that lower cholesterol level and reduce inflammation, also may be able to put bad fats out of the retina. We did a small pilot study that showed large drusen disappeared in about half the patients with AMD who took a high-dose statin, and no one progressed. It was only 10 out of 23 patients. But now we're interested in investigating that further, Dr. Miller says. The notion is that you could turn back the clock and set things back by a decade. Another approach is fixing the retina's autophagy. Autophagy is spelled A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y. Autophagy is a natural process by which cells clear away waste or damaged material inside them. It doesn't work well in retinal cells where people have AMD. We and others are currently studying this, Dr. Miller says. Fighting inflammation. It could be that fats collect in an abnormal way, which stimulates a chronic inflammatory reaction that's destructive to the tissues. Several groups are studying this. Targeting the immune system. A part of the immune system called complement cascade may mistakenly damage the retina. This may play a role in AMD. Several drugs that inhibit the complement cascade are being studied. These approaches are preliminary and they may not pan out, but they offer a reason for hope. Drug development takes a long time. It may be a decade before we have another treatment, Dr. Miller notes, but it may be sooner. In the meantime, what can you do to avoid AMD? For now, the only advice to ward off AMD is to follow healthy lifestyle habits that help reduce your risk for the eye disease and for many other health problems as well. First of all, don't smoke. Smoking has many damaging effects on the body, including increased oxidative stress in the retina. Oxidative stress may affect the way the blood vessels respond, Dr. Miller says, and there seems to be some interaction between smoking and genes that can increase your risk for developing AMD. Control your blood pressure. High blood pressure damages your blood vessels and increases your risk for AMD. We want healthy blood vessels in the eye. They feed the retina nutrients and oxygen, and they cool the eye and keep it from overheating as retinal cells turn light into electrical signals. Exercise. Exercise keeps your blood vessels healthy. Aim for 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity exercise, like cycling, swimming, or brisk walking. Eat a heart-healthy diet. Coronary artery disease, high cholesterol, and obesity all increase your risk for developing AMD. Eat a heart-healthy Mediterranean-style diet that includes lots of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, and olive oil, moderate amounts of fish and poultry, and a little bit of low-fat dairy. Make sure you include green leafy vegetables. They're rich in lutein and zeaxanthin, which have antioxidant properties and have been shown to improve pigment density in the macula, which protects the cells from free radicals. Don't forget eye examination. The American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends exams every 2 to 4 years for people aged 40 to 55, every 1 to 3 years for people 55 to 65, and every 1 to 2 years for people 65 and older. You may need more frequent eye exams depending on your health and risk factors. The next section of the Harvard Health Letter is called Ask the Doctor, and it's done by Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff, who is the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. The question that is asked is, can we slow the aging process? Question, is it possible that scientists will one day be able to slow down the aging of our bodies? Dr. Komaroff answers, you may be dubious, but yes, it is possible. I know it seems that every living thing ages, the flowers in the garden, our pets, and us. Yet a Harvard Medical School colleague who studies aging, genetics professor David Sinclair, tells me there are certain cold water fish that may never die natural deaths. They die from injury or being consumed by a larger animal, but it's not clear that they die naturally. Some are hundreds of years old and still frisky. Scientists are beginning to understand the natural biologic processes that control aging, including specific genes involved, and they've made some truly remarkable discoveries. For example, in a laboratory dish, inserting certain genes into adult human cells can convert them into cells like the very first cells in the human embryo. Aged cells can be made young again. You can turn back the clock all the way back to the beginning. That's extraordinary, but it's cells in a laboratory dish, not living animals. Could aging be slowed in living animals? When scientists introduced a handful of genes into worms, the worms lived 5 times as long. And until nearly the very end, the worms still were as active as they'd been in their youth, able even to copulate. Extending their lifespan extended their health span. It did not increase their period of decrepitude. Another genetics professor here at Harvard Medical School, George Church, inserted 3 genes associated with longevity into mice. Mice are more complex than worms. They are mammals like us. Many things we find to be true in mice prove to be true of us. Inserting the longevity genes into the mice protected them from becoming obese and from developing diabetes, kidney failure, and heart failure. Genes that extended life also protected against the diseases of aging. My colleague Sinclair recently used similar gene therapy techniques to insert a combination of 3 genes into cells in the eyes of mice going blind from aging. This fully restored vision in the aging mice with no ill effects. Sinclair's team have been able to reach into one aging and failing organ and rejuvenate that organ. Could similar techniques one day rejuvenate failing organs in us? You can be sure scientists are interested in answering that question. If on the day I became a doctor, you'd asked me whether we could ever slow aging, my answer would have been, of course not. Aging is an inevitable part of life on Earth. What have you been smoking? I've been surprised. Our investment in biological research has produced many such exciting surprises. The next article from the Harvard Health Letter is entitled, Fight Chronic Inflammation and cholesterol to protect your heart. It takes a 1-2 punch to lower these risks for heart disease, heart attack, and stroke. High cholesterol has long been known as a bad actor in heart health. Too much LDL or bad cholesterol in your blood can lead to fatty deposits in your arteries and the formation of artery-narrowing plaque called atherosclerosis, heart attacks, and strokes. But LDL doesn't act alone. Chronic inflammation, a persistent activation of the immune system, also fuels heart attack and stroke risk. That means you must address both high LDL levels and chronic inflammation to protect your health. Double defenses. Many approaches fight high LDL and chronic inflammation at the same time. Eat a healthy diet. What you eat can contribute to both chronic inflammation and high LDL levels. Offenders include saturated fat, like the kind in red meat and fried foods, sugary foods and drinks like soda and baked goods, and processed foods like chicken nuggets, frozen dinners, or hot dogs. A heart-healthy anti-inflammatory diet like the Mediterranean-style diet includes vegetables, fruits, legumes, whole grains, nuts and seeds, lean protein, low-fat dairy foods, and olive oil. It's not a specific nutrient that confers benefits, but a pattern of eating including fresh leafy vegetables with antioxidants, fiber that may help lower cholesterol, and olive oil that may have an antioxidant function, lowering triglycerides and thereby fighting inflammation, as well as reducing cardiovascular problems, says Dr. Peter Libby, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Control your weight. Being overweight increases the risk for high LDL levels, heart attack, and stroke. One reason why is that fat tissue is teeming with cells that trigger chronic inflammation. We have incontrovertible evidence that abdominal obesity is bad for heart health, says Dr. Libby. To control weight, Dr. Libby suggests thinking about how much you eat, not just what you eat, and reducing your portion sizes if necessary. Even a 5% reduction in body weight will increase your heart health, he says. Increase physical activity. A sedentary lifestyle has many risks, including higher levels of chronic inflammation and lower levels of HDL, the good cholesterol that helps remove LDL from your arteries. This is true even if you are a healthy weight. On the flip side, an active lifestyle helps reduce LDL, high blood pressure, stress, and body weight, and improves triglyceride levels, blood vessel function, and the body's use of insulin. Physical activity may also be involved in taming white blood cells. If you take mice and exercise them in a laboratory, it can quiet the overproduction of inflammatory cells in the bone marrow while preserving the ability to fight infections, Dr. Libby says. How much should you exercise? Don't think of it that way, Dr. Libby says. Just start doing more. Can you increase your walking from once a week to twice a week? You'll make a difference in cardiovascular health with incremental change. You should address sleep and stress issues. Interrupted sleep and high stress levels may contribute to obesity, physical inactivity, and poor food choices, which can lead to high LDL levels. Dr. Libby says poor sleep and high stress may also send signals to bone marrow to increase production of white blood cells, fueling chronic inflammation. That makes it crucial for heart health to reduce stress and see a doctor if you suspect you have sleep apnea or any other kind of sleep difficulty. A number of medications can treat high LDL and chronic inflammation. The first line of defense are statin drugs, which substantially lower heart attack and stroke risk. The ability of statins to lower LDL and to quiet inflammation are equally important in reducing the risk of heart attack and stroke, Dr. Libby says. And now we know that some medications that treat only inflammation may also help reduce heart attack risk. The next article is entitled, Six Ways to Maximize Lung Health. You may not know it, but your lungs, like many of your organs, have some backup power to get you through situations that stress your health. This excess capacity, called physiologic reserve, helps your lungs weather infection and chronic disease. Lung reserve is robust when you're young, but it diminishes over time as part of the normal aging process. Smoking or long-term lung disease like asthma, chronic bronchitis, or emphysema will accelerate the decline in lung function. Diminished reserve makes us more vulnerable to a new or sudden lung problem. If you get a severe infection and start with lower lung function compared to when you were younger, you have less reserve capacity and you won't tolerate that infection very well, says Dr. Richard Schwartzstein, Chief of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine Division at the Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. To fight back, take steps to help increase or sustain your lung reserve and maximize lung health. The article lists six strategies that may help. The first is exercise. Moderate intensity exercise like brisk walking gets your heart and lungs pumping, causing you to take deep breaths. Those deep breaths open up all the areas of your lungs and assist in clearing out accumulated lung secretions called mucus. The areas where secretions collect are good places for inhaled viruses or bacteria to settle, reproduce, and grow, Dr. Schwartzstein explains. So the more secretions you can eliminate, the better it is for the lungs. Avoid smoke and pollution exposure. When you inhale toxins, the lungs secrete mucus, which traps the toxin. Coughing up the mucus removes toxins from the lungs. But the more toxin you're exposed to, like from fires, secondhand tobacco smoke, or pollution, the more mucus you'll produce, which can make it harder to breathe. If you aren't able to avoid smoke or pollution exposure, Dr. Schwartzstein recommends wearing a face mask. The mask can also be effective if you have asthma or allergies that can trigger spasms of the airways, especially if you're exposed to cold air. Masks are helpful because you breathe warmer, humidified air, Dr. Schwartzstein says. Cold air can provoke airway spasms, particularly in people with asthma. Stop smoking. There is no safe amount of smoking. Smoking even a little makes you vulnerable to infection and can lead to lung cancer. We're finding that even small amounts of smoking can damage the lungs in a variety of ways. It causes lung irritation, inflammation, and increased mucus secretion, Dr. Schwartzstein says. Take deep breaths. Deep breathing helps you expand all regions of the lung and eliminate secretions. You can do a workout that incorporates deep breathing, like yoga, or just do a deep breathing exercise. Deep breathing helps reduce your heart rate and your blood pressure. Spend 30 minutes a day doing deep breathing, spaced out through the day, Dr. Schwartzstein suggests. An easy deep breathing exercise is to sit or lie down in a comfortable spot. Breathe in slowly and deeply through your nose, keeping your shoulders still and allow your tummy to expand outward. Now exhale through your nose or mouth and relax your belly. Repeat for 5 minutes. It's okay to include a few shallow breaths as needed until you find your rhythm. Change your position. Changing your position at least once per hour is good for your lungs. Get out of that chair and change your position. Do some deep knee bends. Bend over and do some deep breathing. That will get air circulating to all regions of the lungs and clear out secretions, says Dr. Schwartzstein. Control your weight. Being overweight puts a strain on the muscles that move the lungs, particularly the diaphragm, which expands the lungs when it moves down into your abdomen. In people with a large abdomen, the downward motion of the diaphragm is impaired, so the lungs don't expand as much, Dr. Schwartzstein notes. Losing weight is going to reduce the work of breathing. What about COVID-19? You may wonder if improving lung health would give you more ability to cope with COVID-19 if you happen to get it. We don't have any evidence yet about specific benefits for COVID, Dr. Schwartzstein says, but anything you can do to keep your lungs functioning at their very best level should improve your chances of dealing with a respiratory infection like COVID. And the article shows a picture of a man walking briskly and taking deep breaths while exercising to help clear out the lungs. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoy it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it.